I was born in the so-called infirmaries, quote-unquote, of the concentration camps. Still had a terrible stench, my mother says, of the burning flesh. Still had names written in blood on the wall. And the electric wires were still hot. A four-year-old boy was electrocuted on it. And this was in August of 1946.
The biggest revenge against Hitler is survival.
These are oral histories of Holocaust survivors and their children.
In the ghetto, the Jews were allowed to sort of run their own affairs. And there was a ghetto militia made out of Jewish boys, young men, who helped maintain order, so to speak. And the parent of one of those boys were hiding with my parents. And the Germans went to him and said, "We know your parents were in the ghetto, and they're not, and we're missing 58 other people. If you show us where they're hiding, we will let your parents and you leave Europe." And he believed them, and he led them to the hiding place. And by that time, all the trucks were gone. And so they took the 60 people they found, among them my parents, and had them go down the main street of the village naked, took them to a forest and had them dig a grave, a big trench, and then machine gunned them all and buried them in the mass grave. And we could never even find out where that grave is exactly, because after the war was over, that part of Poland became part of the Soviet Union. And they were totally uninterested in finding such graves. So we still don't know where my parents are buried.
My older sister was going to a little school. All the DP camps had little gathering schools for the children who were of school age, but I was not of school age. And so I wanted to look out the window just to see what was going on in the street, but of course my little chin could hardly get over the windowsill. So I grabbed in one hand a metal pipe and in the other some exposed electrical wires to try and pull myself up. And of course, you know what happened next. I was just about electrocuted. My father pulled me away. And it was kind of a bittersweet experience because in the packages we were getting from America, we were being sent some money that my aunt would try and hide inside the Quaker Oats boxes. But of course, everything was always inspected at the post office, and we never got the money, no matter how she tried to hide it. So my father sent her a letter and told her to please send certain items that could be bartered on the black market. And the items that were of interest in post-war Germany were American nylon stockings, which the soldiers were still buying for girlfriends, soap, and Hershey bars. Well, when my parents got these items, they were able to trade them on the market and get milk and eggs for their little girls. And the chocolate was usually reserved for trading. But on that day, when my hands were all blistered and I was just barely alive, my father let me have a piece of Hershey's chocolate.
He broke away from his work detail, knocked on the door, and he begged for food. And the woman was horrified to see him. And she, there were rumors in the community about these work details, but there wasn't. Apparently, this was this lady's first confirmation of it. So this woman said, "Oh my God, let me get you some food." And my father was so starving that as she was preparing food, he ate the food that had been set out for the dog.
These people's parents' experiences have had an interesting impact on their lives and the lives of their children.
And he was always hungry. That had interesting implications for my house when I was growing up, and it has implications for how I'm raising my kids. And the implication is real simple. We were never told no at the table. If we wanted to eat, we could eat as much as we wanted. Now that seems simple, but if I know what it's like. I know what it's like from my dad, and so it's an interesting thing. If my kids ask for more food, the answer is yes. And if they ask for food before bed, where many parents say no, the answer is yes. It's just inconceivable to say no to somebody who wants to eat.
But one day while we were studying this, a boy raised his hand who said that his father had been a soldier in World War II, and he had some films. And could he bring the films in the next day? And the teacher said yes. Mind you, without her knowledge of really what was on these films. And the next day, up went the screen, and up on the screen was slapped the most hideous graphic kinds of pictures. The lampshades, the piles of rings, the piles of hair. And all the children in the class started to laugh. And I just sat there frozen, tears coming down my eyes. I wanted to get up and shout at them. I wanted to say that could be one of my relatives. But I was 13 years old, and I just didn't have the courage. And it took me a lot of years to have the courage to speak up when I knew I was telling the truth and other people were trying to say otherwise.
My daughter asked me one night, I was tucking her in bed, she said, "Mommy, if the Nazis march here, will they be able to come into the house? Will they pull us out of bed and take us away?" And I really had to think about that. I told her, "Oh no, that won't happen again." After I answered her, I really thought about it a lot, and I think it could, if the conditions were right, happen again.
Many people shared life lessons learned from their experience of the Holocaust and beliefs that are deeply carved into their lives because of the Holocaust.
You have to have the courage to stand up, even if you stand up alone, for justice. Do not follow the sheep. Act upon what in your mind is right. It should be done.
We'd like to thank Anne Schulman, Robert Rich, Stephanie Waldenbauer, Michael Lavoy, Miriam Booth, Claude Ringer, and all those who made this project possible. Thank you.